Welcome to the Intuitive Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Riddick. I'm an author, teacher, and eternal seeker of truth. I am on a mission to spread metaphysical knowledge to everyone in an effort to help them awaken to universal truth. If you want to learn about spirituality, the occult, and all things related to metaphysics, you are in the right place. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Intuitive Awakening. My name is Dina. Thank you for joining me for this week's episode. Our guest today is Emma LaDon de Toro. She is an intuitive life coach, energy healer, and a change agent. She serves people who are looking to develop or affirm their intuition and make changes in their career, their relationships, health, and spirituality. She guides her clients in becoming who they already are, underneath their outdated patterns. She offers intuitive readings, energy body alignment, intuitive life coaching, and online programs. So thank you for being here today, Emma.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dina. It's such a pleasure.
So I wanted to start with how you came into your calling as an intuitive life coach. If you could tell us some of your background there.
Sure, yeah. So in the early 2000s, I was living in Tucson, Arizona, and following a yogic path, really. I was doing yoga, meditation, and just really learning the Vedas. And I was coming to understand that I was an empath and that I was very sensitive to energy around me. Okay. And I went off to an ashram, Ananda Ashram in Monroe, New York for the summer, and studied and meditated and had a very intense experience towards the end of that. I went up to meditate in the cosmic temple, and I had what was called receiving Shaktipat from a guru. And so what happened was I was literally meditating, vibrating, doing all that fun stuff. And I saw a flash of a man who kind of looked like Mr. Clean. Do you remember the old pictures of Mr. Clean? I'm dating myself, but I saw a picture of him, and then an energy in my third eye, and I started writhing on the floor of the meditation room. And when I came to, I was like, "Wow, something is really different in my being," and I touched base with somebody at the ashram that I trusted and cared about and told them about the experience. And she directed me to two or three Indian gurus who looked like Mr. Clean, who had a resemblance to Mr. Clean. And it turned out to be Shivananda, the Ayurvedic physician from India, who was the original founder of Shivananda Ashrams. And while I have not really had and didn't then have a relationship with the ashrams or that particular lineage of yoga, I did have quite a long, probably 3 or 4 relationship, you might say, with Shivananda. And when I came back to Tucson, I started having very intense visual kind of clairvoyance in my meditations. And one day I was coming home from work and I was in a rollover car accident. I was coming up to an intersection, a van hit me, the car rolled over, spun on the top, and I woke up hanging from my seatbelt, having smashed into a light post or something. Wow. And I was like, whoa, okay. And I didn't have a scratch on me. But I was traumatized, obviously, that my inside and my head was shaken and stirred. And the actual psychic and energy healing capacities started after that head injury. And as you probably know, that's not uncommon. Yeah. Like, you know, people, I didn't know anything about it when it happened. And it took me many years to integrate it. But I did learn over time that it's not uncommon for somebody to have a head injury, to receive psychic information, psychic guidance, and then shut it down like not be willing to go into it. And I took the other route. Like I had a understanding of what this was from my studies in Ayurveda and yoga and the East Indian philosophies. And so I just dove in head first and literally. And, you know, at that point, I had no boundaries, really. I was walking around so subtle. I knew what people in front of me, behind me were thinking. I could feel energy in the room. I could talk to trees and animals, and there was no boundaries. I couldn't shut it off after the car accident. And I worked with somebody for many years to help me contain that capacity so it did not take over my life like it did in the first few years. You know, healing from a head injury is a very intense process, but healing from a head injury and keeping the psychic and energy healing capacities is a whole nother ballywick, I guess you could say, you know, because it's very careful. You have to be very careful. Yeah. Yeah. So that's how I came into that. I over time, more was revealed and I learned how to contain it. So, you know, one day I started noticing my hands were getting hot. And of course I didn't really understand what that meant. And I asked around and somebody said, oh, that means healing energy is starting to come to your hands. And so I started to work with my mentor about that. What is this? How does it work? Like, how do I know what's coming through and how it helps people? So
after you had your accident and you said it kind of like awakened these, your healing and, you know, your third eye, et cetera, can I ask, were you afraid? I mean, were there periods that were uncomfortable or did you just kind of have the knowing that this is the direction that I'm supposed to go in?
That's such a good question. I couldn't be afraid. I was so freaking high. I think for 4 years, my feet did not hit the earth. Like I was really high, you know, like I tell people that sometimes and they're like, I don't know what you mean. I'm like, when you have a spiritual high, you know what it's like you just don't touch the ground. For most of that time, one of the mantras I kept hearing was more money's coming, more money's coming, more money's coming. And in the meantime, I went bankrupt. Oh. You know, so, you know, I think, were there times of fear? Of course. Were there times of really difficult times, particularly financially, because I had lost my capacity to use the left side of my brain in many ways. I was so right-brained. I couldn't really think logically. I could barely do math. You know, so I was really in a part of my world that was the polar opposite to how I had lived my life up until that point.
Wow. Right.
So it was a huge swing. So was there fear? Yes. And there was fear more often with not knowing what was happening to me. Who were these voices? What were they? And so having mentors was really important to help me weed that out, right?
Yeah. So I have questions that I wanted to ask you, but I was curious because I think people are probably wondering this. So you have this accident, you know, you have this change in your body, like you said, and you went broke, but yet you're hearing this, you know, voice tell you like money is coming. What was your first reaction? Because many people will say, you know, they're having financial issues, but something is telling them not to worry, it's going to be okay. But yet you worry even more, like exponentially. So how did you deal with that? Like, did you just trust, say, I know it's coming, or did things continue to crumble and it tested you even more?
Yeah. I need to think about this. This was a while ago. It was in 2007. This was happening. So, you know, I trusted and got anxious, and it felt very, my anxiety was very high during that time.
Yeah.
It was very high because I was still learning what was happening to me. And I was trying to follow voices and do the right thing and use a lot of energy healing. And I was avoiding allopathic medicine to deal with what was happening in my brain. So there was a lot of financial fear. And there was also a lot of, willingness to kind of surrender and just do what I needed to do to survive.
Yeah.
Right. So I was applying for public assistance. It was really hard for me to hold a job. So it was very counterintuitive that I was hearing more money is coming when I couldn't hold a job.
Right.
And I was trying to trust the more money is coming, but the anxiety was very high. And I remember facing a lot of shame when I would walk in. Like, of course, you know, we're humans as much as we are spiritual beings.
Yep.
So the shame of asking for help, the shame of going to social services and saying, wow, I'm having trouble working. And I wouldn't go to an allopathic doctor for a diagnosis. So, you know, being on food stamps, getting support with my electric bills and things like that brought up a lot of shame from my own human childhood.
Yeah.
Right. Of like, that is not a good thing. You're a bad person. Like all of that. So I was high and I was processing a lot of shame and anxiety. Right. And it felt very, in retrospect, I would say it felt very karmic. Like I was being asked to look at really deeply embedded patterns of shame and anxiety and belief systems that I learned as a child. And maybe I brought in with me from many other lifetimes, you know?
Right.
And so it was a really mixed bag, I would say up until 2009. And then, so the accident was in 2004. By 2009, I was living in Albuquerque. I had done a stint studying at the Ayurvedic Institute with Dr. Ladd. And somebody had referred me to a healer here I'm in Santa Fe now, but at that time I was living in Albuquerque. And somebody referred me to a healer in Santa Fe whose name was Lee Cartwright. And he's since passed. But I walked into his office and he was like, "You are right on time. Here we are." And he worked on my brain that day. And I felt the two parts of my brain come back together.
Wow.
Like I sat there and he said, "Did you feel that?" And I was like, "Yes, I did." I'm like, "Oh my God, like the two sides of my brains are communicating again." And he said, "Yeah, you're going to be all right. You have to do all that karmic work first." Mm-hmm. And so here you are. And from that day on, the healing, my brain started healing to move differently. It started moving in a infinity pattern instead of bilateral. Like most people's brain works in a bilateral format. And mine works more like in an infinity symbol instead of bilaterally. And he really, he was a major force in my life for several years as I worked with him over time to put my brain back together and really anchor in the capacity to do the work I do today.
Wow.
He was brilliant, really. And he taught me so much. I mean, I'm sure that I integrated his style as well, because I can see myself when I work on people. Sometimes I work in a style similar to his, and I can feel him like coming through, or his frequency kind of guiding in a way. And I'm not sure I would call him a mentor because we didn't have that kind of relationship. Like I would go in and see him for services when I needed to, but we were very, very connected. You know, we barely cared for each other, even though the only time we saw each other was in the office when I came for support.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about your energy. You do, and it's called body or energy body alignments. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about what this work contains? If you sense blocks or patterns, how does this work exactly? And what do you commonly see when you're working with people?
Yeah. I commonly don't see much, actually. The way I was trained to work with this energy was to feel frequency.
Nice. Okay.
And so I learned how to hold and be a conduit for frequency. So I am very often not paying close attention to what the frequency is doing, because from my orientation, that's between the guides and the person the work is being done on. All right. Like I'm the conduit. I'm not actually the doer.
I see.
The doer is Sanat Kumar, who's one of my guides, or it's the higher self of the client, or it is the guides of the client. But I am not the doer. I am the conduit. And so my role is really to hold a frequency, to allow my body to hold their frequencies, and to kind of be a gatekeeper, right? So that only the frequencies that their higher self and soul approves of comes through and does the work. So I can tell when the frequency changes. I can tell when we're working more lightly, I would say, and more deeply. Mm-hmm. So when I'm working lightly and it's a general clearing, we're working on chakras, we're kind of unwinding some gunk that's in the meridians, doing some of those lighter things, I have a lot of freedom. And it's almost as if I'm dismissed, you know, as a personality, just like, hang out here, we'll be right with you. But when it's something more serious than that, so for instance, I worked with somebody recently who had just finished, she's just a few weeks out of surgery from colon cancer. Mm-hmm. And she's a hypnotherapist. She does her own energy forms. And she said, something is still happening in my abdomen. And so we started working, and I went from that state of kind of being dismissed as a personality to pay attention. And I started pacing the room and walking and rocking, and my hands started moving. And that's how I know that we're doing very targeted work in a particular area, because the frequency gets turned up and I have to pay close attention, because they're also using my physical body. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm not just a conduit. They're using my physical body to orient and direct the energy to dissolve or unravel some kind of belief or behavior system that's blocked in the body. And I'll give an example. In that situation, I knew we were doing something like that, but she was speaking to me and saying, okay, I can feel this. I can feel this happening. Oh, that belief system just disappeared.
Oh, wow.
It just dissolved. So she was aware enough to be able to describe to me what was happening. Other clients don't do that. Sometimes they just fall into that twilight area between mm-hmm. sleep and awake. And we talk about it afterwards. So that's what I find very interesting in this particular style of energy body alignment. Actually, that was the name that was given to me when I first started doing it. I was told, call it this. So I'm like, okay, it's energy body alignment. So what I notice is while the energy is happening, I don't have a lot of details. But as soon as it stops, when we're done, then I do an intuitive reading and I'm connected to the guides and I'm talking to them about what just happened. Does that make sense? There's kind of an interesting distinction. I'm either doing the work and I'm a conduit for the work, or I'm talking to the guides.
So your guides, when they tell you what just happened, is that something that you articulate to your clients that you're working with?
Yes. In fact, I don't ask unless the client wants to know.
Okay.
Right. If the client wants to know what happened, or they have questions about their experience, I tap in and I give them whatever comes through. But I don't, I know this happened earlier in my development. I would get a lot of information that I didn't ask for,
mm-hmm.
right? It would just come through.
Yes.
And I've really put some care in place to not just receive information about people I'm near. Right. Or talking to, like, it's very dysregulating for me. My nervous system is already very sensitive. I don't need a free range of information, even if they are a client, right?
Yeah.
You know, I really, as a human being, with my own psychological challenge, you know, work, things that I've been working on, I'm an empath and a codependent. So I really see how my psychological healing around those areas has impacted how I work with energy and how I read intuitively, right? I'm not willing to just be a channel all the time. I have boundaries. And so I'm on or I'm off. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Can you talk to us a little bit about, I had two questions. I had one about, I can't remember if you said your spirit guide's name was Sanat Kumara.
Yes.
I wanted to, you know, talk about that. But then after that, I wanted to talk to you about setting boundaries. So can you tell us a little bit about your spirit guide, how you met your spirit guide, how you work with your guide? I think many people are going to be interested in hearing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So like I said before, I worked for a few years with Shivananda Sarasvati. Mm-hmm. And one day when I was out walking my dog, I used to go to this wilderness area to walk my dog, and he would always work with me while I was there sitting on a rock. And he just said, okay, I'm done. I'm passing you on. I'm complete. And I was like, what? I didn't even know that could happen. Okay. He's like, if you need me, call me, right? Just ask, I'll be there, but you're moving on to your next guide. And I didn't know who that was at the time, but I had been working part-time for a woman who channeled Sanat Kumara. And she lived in New Mexico, and I was her office assistant. And I knew I was there for a very important reason, but it didn't seem to be the office work. And I soon discovered that it was about aligning to Sanat Kumara. And so there was a period of time that she had to travel, and I was alone in her home office, taking care of her business, essentially. And I would kind of get called in to sit in the room that she connected with Sanat. And that was part of my work, was making sure her home was okay. Right. So just kind of, and so I would just go in there before I'd work, and I would meditate and align with his energy over and over. And then, and I could also feel when that process was close to complete, but I was directed to go, his crystal is a celestite. And, it's a light blue aqua-ish, mm-hmm. almost see-through crystal. And so I bought a big hunk of that and put it on my altar at home, and I meditated with it and got a sense for his frequency. Again, what he sounded like in my head, what he felt like. And that was happening kind of in the summer, I think. So I want to say summer, fall of 2007 or 8, somewhere in there. It was definitely before 2009. And I was doing a solstice gathering with friends of mine. They invited me up for a solstice gathering. And through that solstice gathering, the energy in my body was building and building and building. And I had no idea what was going on, but something was happening. And it came to my turn in the circle. I got the talking stick to speak, and he just came right through me as a full body channel.
Wow.
And I was like, holy smokes. and I still to this day don't have any idea what I said, but the people in the room were like, wow, that was incredible. Your voice changed here. You gave us some really good wisdom. It was really incredible. And I'm like, that's great. Like, because it really, I mean, I knew what was happening, but I couldn't track it in a way to remember it, so to speak. I wish somebody had recorded it. I would have loved to have known all these years later what happened. But that was the first, and it's the only time I've been a full body channel for him. Mm. Now I channel him, but he doesn't like move through my whole body in that way. Like I can feel it when his frequency arrives. And he's often present in those energy body alignment sessions and my intuitive readings. I see him kind of as a gateway to other people. Like, he's my frequency and he opens up the gates to connect with others. That's what it feels like to me and my kind of energy field or my head, however you want to think about that, in my seventh and eighth chakras. Yeah. So that's how I came to know him. I have a blog on my website about that I posted just recently, because people have been asking, how did you come to work with a guide? Right. And I think it took me by surprise. I wasn't really necessarily looking for that, but there it was. That's what happened. And in the periods of time, there was a 5-year period where I went back to working at a college. It was a graduate school for counseling and art therapy. That was a consciousness-centered graduate school for counseling and art therapy. He wasn't as present. I would say he was kind of running in the background. That's what it felt like to me, because I was very present in like being a college administrator, and less so in my spiritual work, you know. And so for those 5 years, he was still there. But when I left the college, it was like he just came rushing back in. That was in 2020. And by 2021, he was like, get ready, because I'm coming back. You know, like, we got work to do, honey. That's kind of what it felt like to me. And so I've been really cultivating this capacity with him since the beginning of 2020, again, you know, to be able to really hold his frequency. And that's starting to, I mean, that has bore out in my work, in my energy work, in my intuitive readings. They've taken on a different quality and a different frequency than they had up until probably 2015 or 16. Yeah.
And so how do you set up boundaries when you're working with, whether you're guides or anyone else, when you're—
I have a specific prayer that I say. I sit before a session or before a day of readings and I say a prayer, and that prayer includes the boundary setting and calling in the guides that are working for the highest good of the universe and for the people that I'll be working with for that day. And every few years I tweak the prayer a little bit and help it come in alignment with the work I'm doing. And for me, that's a ritual that really sets the boundaries. And I can feel at the end of the prayer, I can feel the shift in my brain and in my head to know that, okay, the sacred space is created and I'm going to work. You know, and I use that same prayer if I'm going to work on myself as if I'm going to, or if I'm working on others. So, and then at the end, I close the prayer, you know, I say, thank you, give gratitude and release the energy. And I do that after every client. So the prayer stays open. Like if I have 3 or 4, 5 sessions a day, I say the prayer in the morning, but I just shift the client energy, right? I release the client after each session so that I can move into the next client.
Understood. So your work also involves helping to empower people to listen or work with their intuition more. Can you talk to us about what that would look like, and then talk to us about how you manage clients with a lot of skepticism when it comes to this whole intuitive listening?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to answer the second question first. So I don't get a whole lot of clients who are skeptical anymore. So in my life coaching practice, I call it intuitive life coaching, because the life coaching is based on the fact that we have intuition. Every one of us does. And it's about learning how ours works and how to trust it and how to take action on it. Even when it sounds crazy, you know, not outrageously crazy, but you know, I'm like, really? You just want me to take this drive home today instead of that drive home? Yeah, follow it, see what happens, right? So most of the clients that are drawn to me because they have a sense of their own intuition. They're a little scared of it, but they're not skeptical of it. Do you know, like, they're like, wow, can I, Can I trust it? How do I know it's intuition and not ego? That's the biggest question I have that clients come to me with. How do I learn to trust this and trust that it's intuition and it's not my personality or ego or projections or whatever those things are? And so that's the work we do in our sessions, and they bring what's happening in their lives. Like we use their real life examples to help them get comfortable navigating intuition versus something else, right? Mm-hmm. And so we talk about some very basic teachings. Intuition really only comes for the next step. You don't get the whole staircase, right?
Exactly.
So if you're being asked to do something 3 months later, that's probably not your intuition.
Yeah.
If you're being asked to go to the fruit section of the grocery store while you're there, that's probably intuition, right? Like it's very simple. And I think in today's world, that is very complex and very confusing.
Yes.
Learning to follow the simplest nudges in our body, or however it is our intuition comes, whether it's through, you know, clairvoyance, clairsentience, or clairaudience, or however we see or feel or experience, just learning to trust that, even if we don't quite know where it's going to take us. And so I teach practices to help people get comfortable with uncertainty, right? Because sometimes we go in this little direction and we don't really know where it's going to take us. And that gives us some anxiety. So we do work around discerning intuition and from other things, knowing what it really feels like, learning to trust it, and then being willing to take the action that you get the nudge and see what happens. We do a lot of development of curiosity.
That's a very good way of putting it, because a lot of people, I mean, in life where we want the plan all laid out, we want to know step one through step 3000, right?
Absolutely. And,
you know, like you said, the intuition will give you like a breadcrumb and it's like, well, where are the other crumbs?
You can't have the other crumbs yet. It's not like, in a way, it's not determined yet. It's not clear yet. Like, we're heading you in a direction. This is as much as one's person can handle at that moment. So just do that. Right.
Yes. And okay. I think it is very, you know, it can be very scary to live with a lot of uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like we want the reassurance that we're going to be taken care of. It's all going to work out. But the mm-hmm. intuition, that's what makes it scary, I think, for people to live through the intuition itself.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, having been doing this kind of living, I guess I'll say since before 2006, but for sure, you know, that's when I feel like I came into it consciously. Mm-hmm. I've started to, I just trust those nudges, and I can trust those nudges for others, right? That's what happens in the coaching, is that they talk about the nudges they get. And I'm like, okay, like why are you afraid of that?
Right.
And then we can unpack why they're afraid. And then they can say, okay, now I know why I'm afraid. Now I'm willing to do it. Right. And we'll see what happens. And get a little more curious about it instead of afraid about it. If you're willing, I'll give you an example of this.
Sure.
In the winter of 2021, my husband and I had been living and working from home together, which we had never done much in our marriage. We always had jobs and one of us was always out of the house. And at the end of the year of doing that, I was crazy. Like, I was so restless. I couldn't stand to be in the same house with him any longer. And I decided, we live in Santa Fe, like I said, and my home is Tucson. When I think about where on the planet my home is, it's Tucson. And I said, I'm going to Tucson for 10 days. Right. And I was at the time working on a dissertation, and I was like, I'll just do some dissertation work and take a little vacation. And I packed up one of my dogs and I drove to Tucson. As soon as I crossed the line into Arizona, I understood I was staying there longer than 10 days. And I didn't know how much longer than 10 days, but I was staying there for a while. And then I had to have those dual conversations with, I hear the intuition, like I'm staying longer. Oh my God, I'm really scared to talk about this. What does this mean for my marriage? What does this mean for our relationship? How am I going to do that? Can we afford this financially? But you know, like, yeah. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And it took a lot of work to have those conversations with my husband, to have the clarity within myself that I really needed this time alone for reasons that I only vaguely understood when I left. Mm-hmm. Right. And it was really about deepening into myself, my spirituality, like understanding what was going to be happening next in building my practice, and just healing my body. Like I just feel better physically in Tucson. It's a lower elevation. It's a warmer climate. There's lots of things. So I had to follow each of those breadcrumbs as they came up. You know, first I was going for 10 days, then I was going for 3 weeks. Then I ended up being there for 7 weeks. Wow. And every time I had to like, I didn't hear like, you're going to be there for 7 weeks. Yeah. I heard 10 days. Oh yeah. Extend it till this date. Oh yeah. Extend it till this date. And then suddenly I was like, oh, I'm staying till Easter. Huh. Interesting. Okay. So Easter, Christ rises. I come out of the desert and I go back home.
Wow.
So there's a three-part blog on my website about that process of like that whole following the breadcrumbs and how both nerve-wracking it is and how there kind of has to be this underlying trust in the process. Even though the personality goes, yuck, I'm afraid, you know, there has to be this kind of underlying, I trust guidance. I trust guides. And that just takes practice.
Do you find that as one of the main reasons as to why people aren't willing to trust their own intuitive voice? Is that what do you think it is? Do you think it's just the fear? Do you think that it's a fear of failure, a fear of, I don't know?
I think it's all those things, right? I think it's fear. I think it's conditioning. I mean, we're pretty much conditioned not to trust it after we turn 6.
Right.
We turn 7 and like you're in the school system and anything that you really understood as an infant to 6 years old, when our brains are literally connected to other worlds all the time.
Yeah.
That's kind of knocked out of us. Brain, you know, we're just asked to completely ignore that throughout our schooling. So I think, you know, people are afraid to follow it because they've been told it's not a good guidance system, right? We're told we should guide ourselves by our mind, by our logical thinking, by what culture and society says is our next step.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so it takes some unwinding of those belief systems to be able to trust intuition. But almost everybody I talk to or work with, they know what their intuition says.
Yeah.
They just are like, oh no, I don't think so. Like, you want me to do that? You know, so some of the readings that I do are often with people who have a strong intuitive sense, mm-hmm. and they can tell they're being called to do something. And they're like, what's going on? Why would I do this? You know, why would I date this person or marry this person or move to this city or do whatever, you know?
Right.
And then the readings I do have more to do with like helping them understand why, but then also helping them calm the anxiety of like following a guidance system that we've been told isn't valuable, isn't worthy, isn't trustworthy. You know, right? Like we've just really been told so many times throughout our lives. Now I'm going to be 56 next month. So I think that is truer of my generation than other younger generations.
Mm.
Right. Like I think younger generations, depending on their family of origin, depending on where they grew up in the country, had much more openness, you know, than I did in my family of origin and my general generation and the older generation than me.
Yeah.
I'm a Gen X. The millennials seem to have more openness. You know, I work with a lot of millennials and they don't have quite as much to overcome. I don't know why exactly, but they have a different quality of things to overcome than I do, or my generation does.
Yes. So what is, what would you say is the biggest takeaway with the intuitive work that you do? What do you think you personally have learned the most after working with a number of people, building their own intuition, even through energy work? What do you feel like you've learned the most from it? I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah. Oh, there's so many things. The first thing that popped in was the quantum field exists and it works. Just like the scientists say it does.
Yeah.
Like I work with people all over the world from my phone or camera, and they know when the energy starts to flow.
Yeah.
Like we live in a quantum world, not a Newtonian world. Right. That has become very, very clear to me. And I just don't doubt that anymore. Like, I think when I first started opening to this, I was like, is it going to work this time?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't ask that anymore. I just like kill the sign on. I say my prayers and I say, you know, go.
Yes.
So there's kind of like a trust in the quantum world, the quantum universe that I just did not have before. So I definitely learned that for sure. And I learned that curiosity seems to be the key to everything and that I resist being curious. I like the known, just like everybody else. And I'm pretty accepting of that. You know, thankfully my husband is a super curious guy. So when I get stuck, he's like, well, what about, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that answered your question, but what was it something I learned? Sorry, sometimes.
No, just what you feel like you've learned from working with a number of clients.
I think people can heal almost anything that they want to heal if they're willing to kind of turn it over. Turn it over to whatever they consider God or the quantum field is, you know? And that doesn't mean there's not, I think there's also a place for allopathic medicine and there's a place for natural medicine and there's a place for energy medicine. I think there's a place for all of it. Like I'm an integrative practitioner. Like I don't do all those other things because I'm not trained in that. But, you know, like the gal I worked with this week, she had done her allopathic work. She had done her naturopathic work and she said, and something's still not right. Let me use energy.
Nice.
So there's space for all of it. And if I close myself off to any of it, that's where the challenges come. Like if I can't see that my body needs surgery, then I'm going to suffer more.
Right.
Right. But when I realize, oh, my body actually needs surgery. I had a hysterectomy about 10 years ago and I was like, oh my God, that was the best thing I ever did. But I resisted it for, I don't know, probably a decade. I was just unwilling. And that taught me a huge lesson. Like, I can't just pretend those other things don't exist. Mm-hmm. They do, and they can help me too.
Yes, they can.
And you don't have to pick one at the expense of all the others. You can pick all of them at the right time based on your intuition, right?
So Emila, if people want to connect with you, if it's for a reading or an energy body alignment session or some, I don't know, coaching for their life changes, how can they connect to you?
Yeah, my website is my first name, emila.com. And it's got 12 years, maybe more of worth of blogs on there, 12 years of blogs. You can learn a lot about me and my life. I'm pretty transparent there. I have a Facebook group called the Dragonfly Den with Emila Don DeToro, where I do intuitive readings on Fridays for free in a group format. So you can just pop in at noon Eastern on Fridays and ask a question. I call them rapid readings. Each person gets 5 or 10 minutes, depending on how many people show up. I'm there for about 45 minutes. So that's a great place. I think the juiciest content I send is through my email newsletter. So you can sign up for that on my website, emela.com. You can get a freebie on 5 ways to engage your intuition to transform your life. So, so those are probably the 3 places. I'm on all of the social media, right? For Emela Dondator, you can find me just by searching my name usually. But I think those are the 3 places. My website has a lot of great information about the work I do and about me in general. The Dragonfly Den with Emela Dondator on Facebook group. And then my the newsletter that goes out or email that goes out. I send it about twice a month.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you. You know, it's been a pleasure talking with you and I've learned a lot, and everybody please check her out. And I really hope you have a great day. Thank you again for connecting with me.
Oh, thank you so much, Dina. I love the work that you're doing in the world. Your podcast is really lovely, you know, in terms of how you open the door for people to explore all kinds of spiritual and metaphysical areas without fear. You know, I think super important. Like that's where the world is going, you know, right now.
I think so.
Are you familiar with the astrologer Chani Nicholas?
No, I'm not.
So she's a Western astrologer from Canada, but she lives out in LA. And whatever is happening, what she said in her readings recently is that we're at a point in time where the astrology is similar to that of the spiritualist movement in the late 1800s. Astrological lineup is similar to that. And so there's a huge interest in astrology, the occult, metaphysics, all of those things. So that's one of the reasons I saw your podcast and I was like, oh my God, like you're just supporting that opening that we're right in the middle of right now.
That's very, very cool. I had no idea that there was like this alignment in the spiritualist movement. I'm very interested in history. So I'm aware of that. That's very neat. I had no idea.
Yeah. So it's really blooming for lots of other people. So I appreciate connecting with other people who are doing this work right now. It's a really potent time for it.
Very cool. Well, thank you for it. I'm sure people are going to look that up.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, she's a great astrologer. Yeah. Yes. All right. Take care, Dina.
Thank you too.
Yeah. Bye. Bye.